I met a woman.
Nice?
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Trouble is, I think she's trying to set me up.
I'm Gina Hawks. I have an 11 o'clock appointment with Mr. Van.
For what? The Braddock murder. She's a solicitor acting for Stevie Quirk.
He confessed because he's terrified. So terrified, in fact, that he'd rather be in prison. He has some information that he's willing to pass on to you.
Information about what?
Your brother, Mark.
What do you know about Mark? Who killed him?
Mark?
I saw Harry, Paul Hillman.
Paul Hillman's dead.
If Hillman's alive, what does that say about Mark?
These allegations are completely untrue. Well, that was the Prime Minister talking earlier today.
Do you honestly think I would take bribes?
You know James Morpeth?
I'm joined now by the front runner to challenge Worsley, Alexander Wentworth.
This country cannot continue to back a morally bankrupt Prime Minister.
Who'd have thought rioting in London would get to become practically a daily occurrence?
What's this?
Just some facts to put Worsley in his political grave.
You ever heard of a bloke called Jason Stiles?
No. Why?
Trying to find out who Gina Hawks is. Now, she's on his books, he'll have her medical records, an address, something.
But you can stay out here if you want. I've got work to do.
Philip Glenister. Hidden.
This is the help desk. How can I help?
Virus update, please.
Do you have the virus designation?
8, 22, 11, 13, Foxtrot.
One moment, please.
At night, in Dr. Sturgis's office, Frank flashes his torch around inside, while a young man in his 20s, Kevin Gaunt, sits at the doctor's computer, trying to hack into it.
What do you say this guy does?
We're in the doctor's surgery, Kev.
What kind of doctor?
Why? You sick? You want me to phone him?
It's just it shouldn't be this hard to get in.
But you can't get in, right?
Yeah.
Frank looks through one of the desk drawers.
All we need to do is to find Gina Hawks' address.
He takes out a mobile and examines it, pressing the buttons. Then he flashes his torch onto a portrait of a naked woman on the wall.
Nice.
While Kev carries on working, Frank picks up a bottle of spirits. He drops it into his long coat pocket. Lines of text scroll down the screen as Kev taps away. Frank shines his torch on a black and white framed photo on the wall with the caption, Teddy Coburn, RAF Northolt, September 1941.
How's it going? Kev. What's going on? Are you looking at porn or something?
Kev throws him a look of mild annoyance. He types in some more information, then sighs.
This is weird.
I'm still checking on the update. Do you want to hold or should I call you back?
I'll hold.
Frank sees Jason Stiles get out of a car.
Is it the police?
You wish. Let's go. Come on, Kev, no time for that. Come on!
Stiles is now at the door, punching in the entry code as Kev and Frank flee up the stairs. Stiles runs in with his men, gun raised. They scan the rooms downstairs by torchlight. Frank runs to the door at the top of the stairs but finds it locked. Meanwhile, Stiles is checking the rooms. Frank throws himself against the door and manages to open it with a loud thud. Stiles hears the noise and he and his men head upstairs. Frank and Kev flee out of the fire exit and dash off up the street. Stiles follows outside shortly afterwards. He looks up and down the road, but there's no sign of them. He returns to Dr. Sturgis's office. He discovers Kev's abandoned equipment.
Thank you for holding. It appears engineer
keep me informed.
At night, James Morpeth's house. He sits down in an armchair and flicks on the TV with the remote control.
This country will not be put on standstill by these unfounded and vindictive allegations, nor will we let a violent minority dictate the agenda. Now, can I please remind you what we are here for today? To celebrate the achievements of our new education policy, and in particular, this new college here in Allington. When we came to power, we pledged a further £1.5 billion towards schools over the course of Parliament. A promise we are on course to deliver on. Thank you. So that was the Prime Minister opening a new school in Maidstone today. From the way he was talking, you could be forgiven for thinking it was an ordinary day at the office. The pressure on him to resign appears to be like water off a duck's back, as he insists every new development is driven by some unidentified conspiracy. But whilst the Prime Minister continues to issue denials, life continues to be disrupted across Britain. With further violent protests and no resolution to this political crisis in sight, what next? I'm joined now, down the line from Oxford.
Alex.
How are you?
I've read Elspeth's file.
And?
I used to think nothing in modern politics would shock me anymore.
Staggering, isn't it?
Do you think it's completely reliable?
Of course, absolutely.
Why hasn't she published? We'd sell a lot of newspapers.
Well, that was her first thought, and mine, I admit. But then we talked about it. The question is, what do we want to achieve with this information?
The end of Brian Worsley.
Of course, all well and good.
But the real issue is who comes next.
Whoever stands up and makes these revelations is going
to get a great deal of attention.
Wentworth considers this.
Good night, James.
Harry pulls up in his car, mobile phone held to his ear.
Your call will be dealt with shortly. In the interest of security, your conversation will be monitored.
The area around his demolished office has been taped off.
In the interest of security, your conversation will be monitored.
At Belmarsh, Stevie Quirk answers.
Yeah?
Yeah, Stevie. I want to ask how you're doing.
Yeah, not good, Harry, not good.
That's why I wasn't going to ask.
You found Joe yet?
This Hillman thing. Let's go over it again.
Ah, so you believe me now?
Put it this way.
I'm wanting to be convinced.
Look, you've got to find Joe for me.
And then you've got to tell me everything.
All right, come see me today, yeah?
What time are you going to be here?
I've got to go and see somebody first, so I'll be with you sometime this afternoon.
Right, well, afternoon visits are 2 till 5.
Don't leave it later than 1:15, they won't let you in.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Harry.
What?
Be careful, yeah?
Now you bloody tell me.
As Harry hangs up, Michael walks over to him, looking worried.
What happened to the office, Dad?
What? Dad now? Some kind of an explosion.
What?
You were?
Just wanted to say sorry. You know, the police station and that.
Michael, keep your nose clean, all right? Stay out of trouble, you won't get sent to prison.
Could you lend me 50 quid?
50 quid?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money, what do you want 50 quid for?
Mum, buy her a present, make up for everything.
How is Mum?
He spots Fenton Russell.
Dad?
Braddock is dead. Two policemen are dead.
Russell's walking over.
Dad.
He's glaring at Harry with a look of utter contempt.
Dad.
Yeah, 50.
Yeah, 50.
Mum all right?
Fine. Good.
Shame. Yeah, well, you know, I've got insurance, so...
No, no.
Shame you weren't in your office when it exploded.
It is Mr. Russell. Me and him go quite a long way back. Likes his little jokes.
Actually, no. When it comes to cop killers, I have no sense of humour at all.
Go and get your mother that present.
It's your lad, Harry.
That's nice. What's your name, son?
It's none of your business.
Who is he? Is he a cop?
Yeah, I'm a cop. Inside and out.
I don't like cops.
Nobody does.
Well, Michael Gutt. Oh.
The investigators are pretty sure it was a gas leak.
Yeah, well, I suppose they know their job, eh?
Probably an accident.
It do happen.
Do you have any reason to believe it wasn't an accident?
No, you?
Explosions caused by gas leaks are almost always accidental. Except, perhaps to someone like you.
I'm a solicitor, an officer of the court. I think you might be confusing me for one of my clients.
Oh, I'm not confused by you at all, Harold. You're a murdering bastard.
Have a nice day.
Two policemen and a man named Braddock were murdered. You were involved. Maybe you've forgotten.
Nah. A man doesn't forget when he's falsely been accused of murder.
You have no idea how offensive that phrase sounds on a guilty man's lips.
Well, then you shouldn't feel offended, then, eh?
Do you know what? I'm gonna help you. And if you're smart, you'll accept it.
You help me?
Now, based on 30 years as a copper, I'd say that someone's trying to kill you. Something about this doesn't smell right, does it?
It's probably the gas.
I retire in a couple of years. Looking forward to it. Bit of gardening, a little bit of golf. Be a nice change of pace. But before I pack it in, I'm gonna clear up the Braddock case.
With a snort of derision, he walks off and gets into his car. Harry watches him go. Then in a flashback, a car pulls up outside the Braddock house. Young Harry's at the wheel. Mark and Hillman walk towards the house, both armed. Harry sits in the car, looking worried. Mark rings on the doorbell. Braddock opens the door and is shot. A police car pulls up behind young Harry's car. A dark-haired man in the house has also been shot. Clutching his wound, he returns fire. Then a policeman outside the house is shot as well, seemingly by Hillman. Harry looks haunted by the memory. Paris, daytime. Gina walks across a bridge, deep in thought. She pauses midway across and looks down at the water, her hair gently blowing in the wind. Then, she's travelling in a taxi. The taxi pulls up outside the gates of a prison building. She waits in the taxi for a moment, studying the gate and looking down at some photos she's holding of Tanzir as a young man. The gates open, and a frail-looking Tanzir walks out, accompanied by a guard. Gina studies him closely, then gets out of the car. With a trace of apprehension, she approaches him as he walks towards her. He stares closely at her. As they come face to face, he asks, "Who are you? What do you want?" A large black car screeches up as Gina says to him, "I'd like to talk to you, please." A man in a suit gets out and begins leading him away as Gina calls, "Don't go with this man." Another suited man appears and says to Gina, "I'm his lawyer, can I help you?" She replies, "I'm a journalist, I want to do an interview with Mr. Tanzir. I'd like to discuss the treatment of Arab prisoners in France. He replies, I'll ask Mr. Tanzir if he would like to speak to you. She fishes out a business card and hands it to him, calling out, I have to be in London tomorrow, as he walks off. The lawyer replies, I'll call you as soon as I can. In a flashback, the blonde French woman walks along the street smiling to herself. She looks over her shoulder to see Tanzir following behind. Her pace quickens and she turns to face him. He's holding a knife. Gina answers her mobile.
Oui?
Well, if we're doing this in French, it's going to be a very short conversation.
I trust you're calling me to let me know that you found Joe Collins.
Yeah, I like it that you trust me, Gina. Shows we're getting closer.
Have you not found Joe Collins?
I have not. I ran into a bit of a problem.
What problem?
The explosive kind. My office blew up.
What happened?
Seems there was a gas leak. Thanks. But came with a warning.
A warning? Who from?
A friend. At least I have to assume it was a friend, as they had the decency to warn me.
I'm afraid I've lost you.
But... Well, why don't I jump on the Eurostar and you can find me and then you can tell me to my face what this is all about?
I hired you to find a missing witness.
Someone tried to kill me, Gina, the day after you walk into my life. Should I think there's a connection there?
Why should there be?
Stop playing games with me, Gina. Unless you're trying to get me killed.
That's ridiculous.
Is it? Will you answer me this? Have our paths met sometime somewhere that I don't know about?
If they did, I don't know about it either.
And why are you so interested in me?
I can assure you, Mr. Van, I have no interest in you other than as
someone who my client tells me can find Joe Collins, and
may I remind you, you took the money I offered to do exactly that.
She hangs up. Harry walks over to Frank.
There's an email. Blackberry has swiped at the doctor's surgery.
Just one? We'll raise a glass of Coburn's on the 10th of July. What's that mean? I have to tell you, Frank, I'm mildly disappointed. I wanted her medical records and address.
You told me I was breaking into a doctor's office. Did I tell you about the people who chased us out of there?
What people?
Special forces types. Neck snappers. Just after your office gets blown up. I don't mean to put the wind up your H, but I think it's possible someone wants to hurt you.
And this woman's got a file on me. She's got a load of stuff about the Braddock case.
What's her interest? Is she Braddock's daughter, bounty hunter? Is she writing a book?
I don't know, maybe she's the one in trouble.
Well, if she is, you take my advice, H. Run. You look like you could use a holiday. Why don't you fly somewhere, find a beach, lie on a towel till all this goes away?
What if she knows something about Mark?
Mark's dead. Remember?
A series of flashbacks, the sheet being pulled back from Mark's body in the mortuary, police chasing the car with Mark bleeding from the chest on the back seat. Braddock stands looking out of the window as his doorbell rings. Hillman firing his gun, then Mark giving young Harry a nod. Harry looks at another email on the BlackBerry.
Spitfire2@morpethal.com.
Morpethal.com is the domain name of Morpeth Allison. You can look them up on the internet. They're a big firm, cement construction.
Never heard of them.
Maybe because you're not in the market for a hydroelectric dam. If you were, Morpeth Allison would build it for you. And any motorways, nuclear power stations, and skyscrapers you might also need.
Spitfire 2.
He's a Battle of Britain freak. Harry, just leave it.
Can't leave it, Frank. Something big is going on here, Frank. Somebody tried to kill me. Now, back in the day, did you ever come across a bloke called Jason Stiles?
Stiles? No. Was he a face?
He set up the Braddock job for Mark and Hillman.
When you say set up, you think he might have killed Mark?
Let's put it this way, you know, I have my suspicions, yeah. Do you think you can find Joe for me?
Sorry, Itch.
What you're mixed up in? I don't want to be mixed up in.
No.
If you need a new office suite, got a stunner over here. Real mahogany veneer.
No, you're all right.
Harry walks off. Now, he's riding in the back seat of a taxi.
My client appears to be innocent. He told me he was innocent. I believe him. I'm thinking of sending the brief to Nigel Fountain.
Harry's waiting to cross a busy street. Now he's walking along a corridor at the Inns of Court building. He examines the office doors as he goes, until he finds the one he's looking for.
May I help you?
That'd be nice. My name is Harry Venn. I'm a solicitor. I'd like to see Nigel Fountain.
Sir Nigel, do you have an appointment, Mr. Venn?
Yes, I do.
The middle-aged clerk looks sceptical and goes to look in her appointment book.
I don't see an appointment.
Well, that is unusual. See, my assistant spent most of yesterday on the phone trying to arrange an appointment. Obviously, he didn't get one. Maybe I should fire him. No, seriously, I would like to see Sir Nigel.
I'm afraid that won't be possible.
It is important. In fact, it's very important.
Well, you can leave a contact number if you wish, on your way out.
Well, it'll take a few minutes. No, fine, I'll wait.
If you wish, but you'll have to wait outside.
Harry relents and heads back out into the corridor. He takes a seat, glancing absent-mindedly at people coming and going. He picks up a newspaper from the table next to him and flicks through it. One page shows the Prime Minister looking worried, along with the headline, "Wentworth to PM, be gone." He turns the page to read a story about the explosion headlined, "Kentish Town Gas Blast." Then more flashbacks.
Sorry, what unit is killing?
Your brother, Mark.
Sorry, what unit is killing?
Sir Nigel's clerk reappears with two men.
These gentlemen will show you out.
Harry studies them, then gets to his feet, showing one of them the article.
Picture of my office. And the paper.
He heads for Sir Nigel's office door.
You can't go in there.
Sir Nigel, my name is Harry Venn. I really need to
I'm
speak
so sorry,
to you.
I'm so sorry, you just barged past me. I'll call the police.
A solicitor named Gina Hawkes hired me to find a witness.
Wait a minute. Sorry. What were you saying?
It's regarding the Quirk case. She told me that she'd spoken to you about it.
I see.
He turns to his clerk.
Thank you. I'll handle this. How can I help you?
Right, well, since Gina, Miss Hawkes, solicitor...
Yes, I know who she is.
Well, since she first came to me a couple of days ago, certain things have happened.
What things?
Well, for starters, my office blew up.
What are you doing for lunch?
A newsagent's in Paris.
Bonjour. Est-ce que je peux avoir un paquet de Dublin, s'il vous plaît?
5,90.
Merci à vous. Bonne journée.
Merci, au revoir.
A flashback to Jennifer in the same shop, then Gina walking down the narrow street, alarmed as a motorcyclist drives past her. She stops and looks around as she reaches the gates of some gardens. At the very same spot, Tanzir approaches Jennifer, brandishing a flick knife. He plunges the knife into her stomach and she slumps forward. Then Tanzir's being driven off on the back of a motorcycle. Jennifer's now on the ground, mouth open in pain. Gina's still standing at the same spot, lost in her thoughts. Daytime, in Paris. At a cafe, Gina's sitting at a table outside reading the paper when her mobile rings.
Oui?
She asks, is anyone there? A man's voice replies, is that the journalist?
Oui.
Vous voulez parler?
You want to talk? How much are you offering?
Combien vous me donnez?
How much do you want?
Vous voulez combien?
10,000 euros, cash.
Cash.
Where are you?
Okay, vous êtes où?
Je vous appelle plus tard.
I'll call you later. Attends. Come alone. She calls out, wait, but he's hung up. She gets up and leaves the cafe. Harry and Sir Nigel are walking along the street together.
Sir Nigel, I need to know why you're acting for Stevie Quirk. One of the most expensive lawyers in the country, and Stevie doesn't have a bean to his name.
How much do you know about Gina?
A lot less than I'd like to. I mean, professionally speaking.
She's my daughter. She seems to believe Mr. Quirk is innocent. Well, personally, I doubt it, but that's a defending solicitor's prerogative. As I'm sure you'd agree.
Yeah, I suppose.
You said Gina asked you to find a witness?
Yeah, a man called Joseph Collins.
How's Collins connected to this?
I'm not sure. Quirk says Collins has got something that will help him.
Did he say what?
No. Sort of hoping you might know.
Haven't even met Quirk yet. After you.
Thank you.
In a restaurant.
I go on first impressions, Mr. Van. Some people say that's foolish, but I'm rarely wrong. I suspect it's probably the last thing you want anyone to think about you, but I'd say you were an honest man.
How dare you?
Gina is vulnerable.
That's not how she strikes me.
Oh, I know she's tough, but the two things aren't incompatible. For personal reasons and the things in her past. She's, she has a susceptibility to lost causes. She's always looking for dragons with her and none to slay. The wrong type of person could take considerable advantage of that quality.
Are you talking about Quirk? Or me?
Well, I don't think Quirk's in a position to take advantage of anyone.
Hang on. You just said I was honest.
That's what I'm counting on. Right.
I'm not going to get the bill.
It's all done.
Sir Nigel picks up a newspaper on his way out.
You Wentworth man?
Bloody politicians these days. Didn't they clone them? Seem to come in batches of 20.
So you don't think he's a second Churchill, come to rescue the country in our hour of need?
I don't pay much attention to politics.
Wise man. Look, if you find anything about Quirk that can help us, I'd be very grateful. Father likes to shine in his daughter's eyes.
I'll let you know. In fact, I'm on my way to see him right now.
My mobile's on this.
Great. Thank you, Sir Nigel.
No, please, just Nigel.
I'm glad you said that. I'm not too comfortable saying sir.
I'm not too comfortable hearing it. Goodbye.
Thanks for lunch.
Sir Nigel's smile changes to a look of concern as Harry walks off. Matt's lying asleep in bed when he's woken by his mobile.
What?
What are you doing?
I think I've got PTSD. Why?
Well, there's a bloke called Dean Stubbs. He works out of that old boxing club behind Talbot Road. He's in there pretty much every day. I want you to follow him wherever he goes.
Why?
Because I haven't got time. I've got to go and see Stevie Quirk in prison. Now listen, Dean's a friend of Joe Collins. Now, if Joe's been in a hiding, chances are
Athena's gonna know where he is.
So get yourself to the gym.
Harry, I'm seriously unfit.
I'll do you good then. Now listen, Matt, one word of warning.
Don't get too close to him. He's got this bad habit of punching people when they're not looking.
I've got to go. Lauren, hi.
Michael's been arrested.
What, again?
What's he done now?
He was caught on Sunderland Road with drugs. I was at Newton Police Station.
Can you get here?
Yeah, I'm on my way.
With a sigh, Harry checks his watch and drives off. Harry's driving, looking tense. Belmarsh Prison. Inmates hanging around on a busy wing. The door of Stevie's cell's ajar and he's inside, rubbing some solution on his hands.
Jones, Bassett, Carr, visits.
Stevie comes out expectantly as the inmates whose names have been called go off for their visits. He returns to his cell and sits down, looking tense. Harry enters the police station to find Lauren waiting on a bench.
Have you seen him?
He won't let me.
Harry sits down next to her. Stevie's waiting in his cell, looking agitated. An officer comes to the gates of the wing.
Blake, Brody, Wesson, visits!
Oi, you got one for me?
Oi, hold up, you got a visit for me, Quirk!
The officer closes the gate in his face. Back at the police station, Harry and Lauren are still waiting. A door opens and a suited black woman approaches them.
Hello, Harry.
Hey.
It's not good news. We're going to charge him.
What, for buying a bit of dope?
He wasn't buying, and it wasn't dope.
What was it then?
They're saying he bought 50 quid's worth of crack and was trying to sell it.
What's he doing, selling crack? Lauren, Michael is not the type of kid that goes around selling crack.
The police are going to oppose bail.
Can they do that?
It's because he was already on bail. We'll apply again. Leave it with me. I'm working on it.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. Jeez.
I don't understand. How did he get 50 quid?
I gave it to him. He said he wanted to buy you a present. Oh. I'm sorry, Lauren, you know. You asked me for it. I couldn't say no. Just trying to make it up to him.
That's not the way to do it.
Later, Harry's driving in slow-moving traffic, hooting his horn in frustration.
Put your fucking foot down!
The car in front comes to a full stop.
Oh, Jesus.
Cook, Hussein, Campbell, visits.
Stevie looks despondent. Harry pulls up at speed into the prison car park. He brings the car quickly to a stop, gets out and runs into the entrance. He approaches an officer behind the front desk.
Oh, here, this is Stephen Quirk.
Name?
Harry Venn, solicitor.
Take a seat in there.
Harry sits down and waits.
Help desk, may I have your customer ID? WB082019.
Smith, 19. Cooper, Saville, and Quirk, busy.
May I have characters 2, 7, and 8 only on your protocol?
Hotel November Tango.
You are verified. One moment while I secure.
Which one's Quirk? You're Quirk, aren't you?
Yeah, what's up?
He's got to stay here.
What do you mean I've got to stay here?
Right, that's you, with me.
So what am I staying here for?
You've got to wait, all right? If you don't like it, you go back to the wing.
You're too much of that, cabin boy. Yeah, I'll have your badge here.
Relax. You'll get your visit.
You
How can we help?
Virus update, please.
Do you have the virus designation?
19171130 Fox Road.
One moment. I'm still checking on the update. Do you want to hold or should I call you back?
I'll hold.
Stevie's still waiting in the prison corridor.
Oi, someone, yeah? I have got visit!
Another prisoner appears behind him.
All right, mate. 2-1.
The prisoner produces a knife and moves towards him. Harry returns to the front desk.
Excuse me, what's the delay?
I'll see what's keeping him.
Stevie's being knifed in the back, over and over again. Blood gushing from his mouth, he sinks to the floor.
Hey, where's Quirk? I've got a solicitor here waiting for him. Yeah, have a look, will you?
Stevie's attacker staggers back down the corridor. The gates buzzed open for him and he makes his escape. Stevie's slumped, motionless on the floor. At the front desk, Harry hears the alarm. The officer turns to him with a look of sadness. Meanwhile, the man who is talking on the phone nearby is James Morpeth.
Thank you for waiting. We've just had confirmation. That virus has been successfully cleansed.
Thank you.
The decent, hard-working people of this country, I know because I talk to them every day, want order, they want peace, and they want stability, and they have a right to expect their government to deliver those things. Now, Brian Worsley and his pick-and-mix coalition have delivered one thing so far, and that's chaos. Fiscal meltdown, civil meltdown, and he wants a chance to do it again. He wants a second chance. Who in their right mind would give it to him? Not the people I'm talking to.
Well, that was Alexander Wentworth again piling the pressure on the coalition government. And there is little sign that the slow-moving developments at Westminster are calming the chaos on the streets. The protests in the centre of London today have seen rising casualties, and for the first time, the police strategy of kettling has backfired, with small groups of protesters breaking off from the main crowds and trouble breaking out in isolated pockets throughout the city.
Elspeth's in the back of her limousine reading a news story about Wentworth on her tablet computer. They turn a corner and the car's surrounded.
What's happening?
Demonstrators.
Eggs are smashed on the windows. Demonstrators are kicking and punching the car. A metal pole crashes through the window. A large, whitewashed country mansion in extensive grounds. Elspeth's limo makes its way up the long, winding drive. Inside, a reception of well-heeled guests is taking place. Elspeth's car draws up under the columned portico entrance. She gets out and makes her way inside.
Elspeth, you look wonderful.
Thank you, James.
Thank you all so much for coming. The entire country seems to be collapsing and there are rioters on the streets, but you haven't let them stop you, so well done you. And I'd like to make a special thanks to Elspeth. As some of you may have already heard, she was attacked in her car on her way here, but she didn't let it stop her. Now, there are only 4 paintings left. Only 4.
Well,
so please, please.
He's through here.
But buy them at hideously expensive prices. Not only because they're worth it, but because you will not find a worthier cause than the Cancel Cancer Foundation. Thank you very much. Thank you.
They enter a room where a distinguished looking grey haired man's waiting.
I don't think you two have met. General Sir Adrian Henderson, Elspeth Verney.
Pleased to meet you, General.
Adrian, please. Adrian has read the Worsley material.
It's staggering. It's appalling. He'll go to prison, of course, unless he takes the Roman way out.
Alex feels the same way and has agreed to make the revelations personally.
In the house?
We're thinking a press conference will have a greater impact.
In front of the world's media, it'll be the perfect launching pad for Alex.
Is he up to it? He's very young.
He's young, vigorous, clever, principled, charismatic. He's perfect.
When?
The day after tomorrow.
Good.
Adrian is famously a man of very few words.
It's important that things are seen to be done with the minimum amount of display. The more ostentation, the harder it'll be for us to sell.
Mm-hmm. Low key.
With the option of a higher key, if necessary.
What kind of numbers can we expect from the Wentworth team?
Alex has been cagey about that.
It will help with my people if the numbers are larger rather than smaller.
Alex labours under particular restraints. But once we get going, the facts on the ground and his prestige... Which RDO Media has greatly enhanced. And with Tigger's support...
Are we there yet, Edward Tigger?
We are this close.
He holds his thumb and forefinger millimetres apart. Back at Belmarsh Prison, Harry's let out of the security entrance and walks back to his car, deep in thought. He gets in the car and sits down, rubbing his neck wearily. He takes a deep breath and thinks to himself for a long moment. He reaches into his jacket pocket, takes out his mobile and makes a call. Gina's walking down a street in Paris when her phone rings. Meanwhile, Harry notices Styles in the car park next to him.
Oui? Hello, oui?
I'll call you back.
Gina looks mystified. Harry takes out a photo of Styles and compares it with the man parked next to him. He watches as another man gets in the car with Styles. He carries on watching as the car backs out of its space and drives off. Later, Harry's driving his car along a motorway. He seems wrapped up in his thoughts as another car pulls alongside him in the overtaking lane. It's Styles. He stares at Harry, who turns and sees him. The two men lock eyes for a moment, then the car Styles is travelling in pulls past. Breathing heavily, Harry turns off at the next exit. Paris, the Hotel du Louvre. In a plush room with a four-poster bed, Gina answers her mobile to Harry, now travelling on a high-speed train.
Hello?
Stevie Quirk was murdered this afternoon.
What happened?
He was stabbed. Not only that, two men followed me when I left Belmarsh. One of them was Jason Styles.
Do you know what I just said, Gina?
Jason Styles was at the prison. He followed me.
I don't know who that is.
Stop fucking lying to me, Gina. I'm on the Eurostar. You better get your answers ready.
No, don't come to Paris, Mr. Van.
My train gets in at 8:05 at the Gare du Nord. You'd be there to meet me.
The train rockets through the countryside. Gina sits in her room, contemplating. Her mobile rings again.
Oui?
Vous avez l'argent?
Oui.
The man asks, do you have the money? When she replies yes, he responds, be there in 1 hour. She asks where, but he doesn't respond. The incoming number was blocked. Then she gets a text with an address in Paris. She gets her coat and leaves the room. Then she's making her way along the hotel corridor. Harry's now walking through the Gare du Nord terminal. He looks around for any sign of Gina at the station, but she's not there. The busy terminal's teeming with passengers. Harry makes a call on his mobile.
Gina, it's me, Harry. I'm on the Gare du Nord. You're supposed to meet me here. Where are you? Call me.
The grapevine is buzzing here at Westminster today, with rumours emerging that billionaire industrialist James Morpeth has thrown his political and financial weight behind Alexander Wentworth, who has today been upping the pressure on the Prime Minister.
It's high time this country had a government based on principle with a big P and not politics with a small one. We need rigour. We need clarity, we need courage. We know what the problems are. The country is crying out for clear leadership. It's time for some conviction.
Hello?
Sir Nigel, it's
Harry Venn. What can I do for you, Harry?
I'm supposed to be meeting Gina, but she hasn't showed up. And her phone's going straight to voicemail.
But if she arranged to meet you, I'm sure she'll show. Harry?
Yeah, Stevie Quirk was murdered this afternoon in prison.
My God.
Yeah, I don't want this to worry you or anything. It's probably nothing, but,
Where are you?
I'm in Paris.
Paris?
Yeah. Do you know where Gina stays when she's here?
Yes. Well, you could try the Hotel des Academies
des Arts.
Hang on a second, say that again. The hotel what?
Des Academies.
Des Arts. That's A-R-T-S.
It's in the six.
Okay, I'll give him a call. Thanks, bye.
Bye.
After hanging up, Sir Nigel straight away makes another call. Harry makes his way out of the terminal and onto the street. He looks up and down the busy city street, a hubbub of cars and people. Then, he's travelling in a taxi. He takes out his mobile and makes a call. Also travelling in a taxi, Gina answers.
Hello?
You were supposed to meet me.
Mr. Van, I explicitly told you
not to come.
Where are you?
I'm on my way to a meeting.
Where? Gina, where are you?
I'll text you the address.
You'll be there this time.
Harry's phone goes off with Gina's message sending him the address she's travelling to. He shows the phone to the driver.
Monsieur.
Oui?
Cette adresse, s'il vous plaît.
Très bien.
Merci.
Gina's taxi pulls up outside a disused factory. The driver declares, here we are.
Voilà, c'est ici.
She gets out and waits on the pavement. The taxi drives off.
This is the help desk. May I have your client ID?
Whiskey Bravo 08201919.
Verification. May I have values 1, 4, and 8 of your protocol?
Sierra Yankee Bravo.
C'est en zir?
You are verified. How may we help?
Status report on virus 7, 8, 11, 6, Foxtrot.
Please hold.
A flock of birds taking flight startles Gina as she walks through the deserted forecourt. Harry's still on his way. Gina walks in through an open doorway. Harry leans forward to speak to the driver.
Monsieur, we need to go faster, quicker.
Okay.
Oui, merci.
Gina's walking through the derelict factory floor.
C'est un zir?
The cavernous building seems deserted. She calls out, "Is anyone there?" She follows the sound of the radio. She enters a darkened room where a man's sitting at a table with his back to her. She says, "I've got the money. The money's yours. 10,000 euros. But first, I have some questions." She walks towards him asking, "Tell me why you killed Jennifer Mascati. I know someone paid you to kill her. Tell me who paid you and you can have the money." As she nears him, she turns off the radio, then notices he has blood caked on the side of his face. She flees from the room back out to the factory floor, where she stops in her tracks at the sight of a masked figure in the distance. She calls out, "I'm a journalist. If you want money..."
Je suis journaliste. Si vous voulez d'argent.
The man beckons her over. She turns to see another masked man who starts running towards her. She dashes back into the dark factory building and up a flight of steps. The masked man pursues her as she dashes into another room, closing the double doors and locking them with a metal pole through the handles. She runs on frantically across the large room. She arrives at another flight of steps down, which are chained off with a sign saying not to enter. The man's trying to force the doors open. Gina takes off her scarf and throws it over the chain, making it look as if she's gone down the steps. The man's now climbing over a wall into the room, as Gina quietly sprints to the other end of it and hides around a corner. The masked man walks around the room looking for her. As he nears Gina's hiding place, she quickly dodges into another one. Then he scans the area where Gina's hiding, crouched behind a low wall. She closes her eyes tightly, as if willing him not to find her. Satisfied she's not there, he sprints off down the steps, vaulting over the metal chain where she draped her scarf. Outside, Harry's now walked into the factory compound.
Gina!
He reaches into his jacket pocket and takes out his mobile. Inside the factory, Gina's mobile goes off. Instantly hearing it, the masked man sprints back up the stairs. Gina makes a run for it. The masked man tears after her, catching up with Gina at the bottom of the stairs at the other end of the room. As Gina cowers in front of him, he raises his pistol and prepares to fire, when Harry clubs him on the back of the head. He grabs Gina's hand, but as they sprint out of the compound, the other masked gunman's facing them, weapon raised. He circles them, then removes his balaclava.
Hello, Harry. Stevie told me you'd come back from the dead, Paul. You want to show me that trick?
Yeah, I could see how you could use it just now.
But whatever it is, it's bloody good because you fooled my old man.
I just need a good doctor.
Yeah, obviously you went to a lot of trouble, yeah?
I'm a clean skin, Harry. Worth the effort for them and for me. It's good money.
Well, regular?
That's clockwork. Goes into my bank account every month. Get to travel. Expenses are generous.
Nice. What'd you have to do for that, then?
Oh, you know, this and that.
And this and that, does that include killing people?
Someone's got to do it, Harry.
Did you kill Stevie?
No. Not personally. It was an help desk job.
What's the help desk?
They pay the checks.
It's the help desk they are. They helped blow up my office, did they?
Yeah, that was us. How did you get out of there, Harry?
What about Mark? He back from the dead and all?
It's been nice talking to you, Harry.
Now, you listen to me, Paul. You listen to me. Now, you let the girl go.
You're not getting it, Harry. She's the one they want dead. You? You're just collateral damage. Now get out of the way, Harry. Get out of the way, Harry!
A shot rings out and Hillman falls to the floor. The other masked gunman standing over his body and fires again. Then he raises his weapon at Harry and Gina.
Shit.
Next time.
I saw Hillman, I talked to him, it was Paul bloody Hillman.
It was a cock-up, Nigel.
Since when does the help desk make cock-ups?
How do you know Jason Stiles?
The engineers weren't expecting Glenn in Paris.
Find Gina Hawks and Harry her and kill them.
The stakes for this country could not be higher. We have to be fearless.
How about if you stayed here with me?
Can you get me a gun?
What's going on, Harry?
You don't come back till you hear from me. If you don't hear from me, you don't come back at all. I want to talk.
Oh, Jesus!
What would you like to talk about?
And that's all at the same time, 9 o'clock next Thursday here on BBC One.